Russia Saglam Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
This is not the first time Palestinian people are spending Ramadan under Israeli aggression. In 2014, the Israeli regime also waged a destructive war on Gaza during the holy month. However, the current genocidal war is unprecedented in terms of its colossal casualties. Many Palestinians have become orphans and widows and lost their children. The memory of their loved ones will stay with them in Ramadan.
The life here is so difficult. The holy month of Ramadan is around the corner and we are still displaced from our homes and our families are torn apart. We have nothing to eat for iftar. I'm originally from Gaza. I've lost 37 members of my family. They were so close to my heart. Every time I remember them, my gut is wrenched and I become so sad and furious.
With markets destroyed and goods scarce, Gazans don't know where their iftar meals will come from, which means more suffering and agony. The vast majority of the people live in small tents amid the starvation that has already claimed the lives of several Palestinian children.
The situation in Gaza is very difficult. There is no food. The people are struggling to find anything to eat with flour scarce. Here in the south, they queue in long lines for food. Even those who attempt to get anything from the aid trucks are putting their lives at risk as Israeli soldiers open fire on them. I don't know what we're going to do in Ramadan.
Palestinians' catastrophe doesn't stop with the loss of their relatives. It is deepened by the full-scale destruction that has become palpable in every corner of Gaza, including mosques, which means they won't be able to say their prayers and worships as usual. Even if their mosques hadn't been destroyed, it would still be impossible for them to perform their prayers under the incessant Israeli bombardments.
The humanitarian conditions are completely disastrous. The people were displaced from several parts of Gaza, including the northern and central areas of the Strip. It is literally catastrophic. There is no source of income or food, and the people are completely relying on the small amounts of donation provided by a limited numbers of charity institutions. In addition to that, mosques have been completely destroyed by Israeli warplanes and we will never be able to pray in them.
While some aid has been trickling into Gaza, it's minuscule compared to the needs of the Palestinians. With Ramadan arriving, more assistance cannot come soon enough for them.
As the whole Muslim nation welcomes Ramadan, Palestinians are wondering why they have been abandoned by many Muslim leaders to face the Israeli campaign of death and starvation. To Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
The Iranian National Oil and Gas Company says that this is the most strategic project in the history of Iran's oil and gas industry and its long-sought empowerment of domestic entities. Under this project, 90 trillion cubic feet of gas and 2 billion barrels of gas condensates will be available for use. Top Iranian companies Petropars, Oil Industries Engineering and Construction, Khatam al-Anbiya Construction Headquarters, Mapna Group and a consulting company are the contractors of the mega project.
In the subject matter of the development and increase of capacities of the gas and oil refineries, we witnessed the second phase of Abadan refinery with the capacity of 210,000 barrels, which helped the production and supply of gas in the country. In the 14th phase of the South Pars refineries, 50 million cubic feet of gas is produced per day, which again adds to the capacity of gas production in the country.
The massive project has created an opportunity to kickstart economic prosperity and employment in the face of unilateral Western sanctions. This has also allowed Iranian producers and companies to engage greatly in the economic growth and industrial development of the country and neutralize the sanctions.
Today, all Iranian people should witness the fact that the surrounding nations trust the Iranian National Oil Company and the relative competent companies and contractors and do rely on them, because they know well that the South Pass was built by Iranian companies, and the day that they thought that it was impossible to do so without the help and presence of foreigners, that exact day was the day that South Pass became what it is today.
While sanctions have forced the governing bodies to change their attitude towards domestic companies and entrust them with tasks, it should be noted that Iranian producers are not perennial supporters of sanctions. Rather, they would like to interact and acquire world-class technologies from foreign companies to empower themselves.
With contracts for developing oil and gas fields signed and projects for boosting pressure in South Pars gas field being started, Iran is experiencing yet another success in the mega gas project to exploit the immense gas field. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Chants echoed through the streets of the Pakistani capital Islamabad as thousands of demonstrators gathered to condemn the United States and Israel. The protest, organized by Pakistan's largest religio-political party, Jamaat-e-Islami, saw passionate crowds marching through the streets, expressing solidarity with the Palestinian cause and denouncing Israel's actions, which take place with the support of the U.S.
Of course, there should be a ceasefire long ago, but even now we are pressing for it, and you have seen how irresponsible and insensitive Biden has been responding. He was just having ice cream and talking about ceasefire as if it was a very casual affair. And on the other hand, the way children are dying, women are dying from morning till night, and especially there are a lot of prisoners which are taken by Israel. And there are large number of women and children who have been taken as prisoners, and their condition is pathetic.
The acts of solidarity in Pakistan reflect widespread outrage and sympathy for the plight of the Palestinian people.
As a Pakistani citizen, I think that our government should immediately call for a ceasefire and boycott all the products that are supporting the Israeli aggression in Palestine. And I also want to say that the whole world should come out of their houses and protest, because the kids, Palestinian kids, are starving right now, and they are being starved, and they are scared, and they are homeless, and they have nothing to eat and drink, and they are dying. And how can anybody bear that?
The protesting Pakistanis called on the government to cut its ties with the U.S. over what they call the barbaric role in the killing of innocent men, women, and children in Gaza.
People here in Pakistan are concerned about the ongoing atrocities committed by Israeli forces in Gaza. They are demanding that the international community enforce an immediate ceasefire by bringing the U.S. and Israel to the International Court of Justice for their war crimes in Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Syrians have long been accustomed to eagerly welcoming the holy month of Ramadan, brimming with joy and happiness. But this year has brought an unusual sense of sadness as the harsh economic conditions exacerbated by unjustified Western sanctions is casting a shadow over their celebrations. Moreover, their hearts are heavy with sorrow for their brethren in Gaza, who endure the devastating consequences of the ongoing Israeli onslaught.
We are going through a painful situation as people do not have money due to the poor economic conditions. As store owners, we are trying to consider the people's circumstances by reducing prices during Ramadan. However, basic production materials are expensive due to the importing difficulties.
Ramadan is always a special month, as it is a month of worship, patience and blessings, especially in Palestine. However, this year it is as if Palestinians in Gaza have been fasting for more than 5 months. We pray for them and gain our determination, patience and steadfastness from them, from the brave faces of Gaza's children, the resilience of its resistance fighters, and the patience of its steadfast women.
Ramadan comes this year while the Western world, which claims freedom and humanity, practices double standards with the people of Gaza, who are suffering from hunger, blockade, and Israeli crimes. Palestinians are paying the price for demanding their freedom and legitimate rights. Syrians will always stand with them until the final victory over the Zionist regime and the liberation of the occupied lands.
The month of Ramadan comes this year amid the continued unjust Western economic blockade on Syria. We see our people in Gaza suffering from blockade, hunger, killing, destruction, and continuous Zionist aggression without deterrent.
Syrians are a living nation because they have defended resistance, and the Palestinian people are the soul of resistance. We say to the West, you will lose, and the access of resistance from Iran to Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and Yemen will prevail. We will break the Caesar Act and all your blockades on Syria and Gaza, and we will all pray in Al-Quds.
Syrian message to their brothers and sisters in Gaza is that no matter how difficult our circumstances may be, your tragedy in Gaza remains even more challenging, and your resilience is an inspiration not only for us, but for all free people around the world.
Syrians welcome Ramadan this year amid hard economic conditions due to unjust Western sanctions and with heavy hearts for their besieged brothers and sisters in Gaza. Yet their commitment to the resistance fuels their faith in eventual victory. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Yemenis from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities and chanted slogans in praise of the Yemeni army's naval operations. They also reaffirmed their full support for the Palestinian people and pledged to continue the protests until the Israeli genocide ceases.
The Yemeni government, all its members, its president and the people have one position, which is to support the Palestinian cause. We must thwart the American, Israeli and British project and stop starvation in Palestine. Our position is an honorable position, and our broad movement indicates that the Yemenis have great awareness and, God willing, victories for the nation will be at hand.
Protesters expressed support for the Yemeni army's naval operations against Western vessels, stating that the Palestinian cause helped the Yemeni people overcome the problems created by the Western powers in the country. They believe the conspiracy targets the whole region, not just Palestine or Yemen, and call on all Muslims to unite to thwart Western projects.
We went out today in Sana'a, as you can see, and in the rest of the governorates to announce to the world that our demonstrations and our position is a religious position that will not change with regimes or rulers. We will continue to insist on our position until our brothers in Gaza are victorious, receive food and medicine, and the U.S.-Israeli genocide against them stops. Our army will also continue its operations until the aggression against our country stops. Our operations are escalating, and upcoming strikes will stun both friends and enemies.
Our demonstration here in Sana'a and other governorates is to send a message that we as Yemenis have been able to overcome all the differences and problems that the enemies sought to create inside Yemen. The other message is that we continue to support the Palestinian cause, and what is happening in Gaza is shameful for all Arabs and Muslims. The operations of our army in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab are completely linked to what is happening to the people of Gaza, and the escalation of naval military operations is a legitimate move to support the Palestinian cause.
Recently, the Yemeni army intensified its naval attacks against American, British and Israeli-linked vessels and regional waterways, resulting in the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. It also attacked an American vessel, which the U.S. claimed led to loss of lives among the ship's crew members.
Yemenis assert that the success of Yemeni naval attacks, despite the presence of Western warships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, demonstrates the capability and height of weaponry possessed by the Yemeni army. They believe this achievement should inspire other regional forces to join the fight and support the Palestinians in face of the common enemies. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana'a.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
On the International Day for Women's Rights, demonstrations and pro-feminism strikes were held around France by women and the men who support their fight for equality. In October 1789, the Women's March on Versailles apprehended King Louis XVI at his luxurious palace and brought him to justice in Paris. But much work remains to be done in Republican France. Only 37% of French Parliament is female. Two-thirds of France's working poor are women, in large part because women compose 80% of France's part-time workers.
A return to far-right economic austerity after the COVID lockdowns hurt women more than any other minority. Women are more likely to work in the government and to use social services, so cuts to government budgets hurt them more than men.
In France, one woman is killed every 3 days by their partner or ex-partner. Our government must take more measures to protect the safety of our women. We also need policies which abolish the male-female pay gap and which better protect women from rape.
Israel's attempted genocide of Gaza has had a disastrous effect on women. From the starvation of 60,000 pregnant women to the forced displacement of 1 million females, to the inhuman and degrading treatment of women by Israeli forces, according to the United Nations, to the murder of nearly 10,000 women.
Israel's genocide in Gaza is an issue for all feminists and for all humanists. Anyone who thinks that we are at the wrong march are obviously just Zionist imperialists. And they also obviously do not understand what it means to support women with equality, respect, and justice.
Globally, 60% of poor people are women. They are paid 23% less than a man, even when doing the same work, and they spend 2.5 more hours doing domestic chores than men.
We have made some progress pushing women's rights to the forefront, but we must demand many other advancements. We must also not forget about the rights of girls, many of whom suffer from sexual violence, and who must be better protected and better represented by our government.
In France and much of the West, women suffer from widespread objectification and the commodification of their bodies. France allows the use of naked women in public advertising, which many say undermines its regular claim to be a feminist model which other nations must emulate. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
In the limelight.
In Britain, the accounting firm BDO has warned of future impact of fraudsters using artificial intelligence to rip off customers. The amount of fraud in Britain more than doubled to £2.3 billion in 2023, according to a new report. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The accounting firm BDO has warned of future impact of fraudsters using artificial intelligence to rip off customers. The amount of fraud committed in the United Kingdom more than doubled to £2.3 billion in 2023, marking the second biggest year for scams in the last two decades, according to a report that also warns of the future impact of fraudsters using artificial intelligence to rip off their customers. The accounting firm's BDO's latest fraud track report found that number of reported cases rose by 18% to a three-year high, and the number of high-value cases over £50 million increased by 60% year-on-year in 2023. Half of the high-value frauds were over £200 million. The accounting firm BDO said factors behind the overall rise included the growing popularity of online scams, phishing and system breaches, as well as authorised push payments transactions, where fraudsters trick people into transferring money to them. Analysis of the data over the last decade shows the number of reported cases of fraud is rising, and the amounts involved are getting bigger, according to Kaylee Crosthwaite, a partner at accounting firm BDO. Kaylee Crosthwaite said, "And we believe that it is likely to continue to do so. The sad reality is that the fraudsters will be looking to stay one step ahead by exploiting new options like artificial intelligence." British banks have warned of an epidemic of scams. Barclays said last year that more than 70% of scams were happening on social media sites, online marketplaces, and dating apps. London and the southeast of England remained the biggest fraud hotspot, with a 170% year-on-year increase in value as a result of several high-profile cases, and a 43% increase in reported cases. The British newspaper The Times has also covered this same story and tells us more. The amount of fraud committed in the United Kingdom more than doubled to £2.3 billion in 2023, according to a new report. The accounting firm BDO's latest fraud track report found that the number of reported cases of fraud rose by 18% to a three-year high. London and the southeast of England remained the biggest fraud hotspots in Britain, with a 170% year-on-year increase in value. Major cases last year of fraud included Entain, the owner of Ladbrokes, and Coral betting chains, reaching a £585 million settlement with HM Revenue and Customs, the UK's tax authority, over alleged bribery at a business it owned in Turkey. The former Formula One boss, Bernie Eccleston, also pleaded guilty to fraud after being accused of failing to declare more than £400 million of overseas assets to the British government. He agreed to pay His Majesty's Revenue and Customs £652 million. The region with the second highest level of reported fraud was the East Midlands, which jumped from 12th place in 2022 to the second place. The accounting firm BDO said the true overall level of fraud was likely to be significantly higher than the £2.3 billion because statistics from the crime survey for England and Wales had revealed that fewer than one in seven offences are reported to the police. A report last year found that the number of people committing harmless fraud, such as cheating on their cancelled tax charges or trying to reclaim money on lost gambling bets, had soared amid the cost of living crisis in Britain.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the holy month of Ramadan has started for Muslims around the world. This month is known for its peace and blessings. But this year, the whole Islamic Ummah, Islamic community, must deal with the fact that their brothers and sisters in Gaza are experiencing a U.S.-Israeli Holocaust. What does that mean for them? And what will this month of Ramadan mean for the 2.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, who are still undergoing the Israeli genocide? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Kim Sharif, a Yemeni activist and lawyer out of London. And Zafar Bangash, Director of Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought out of Toronto. Welcome both of you to the program. Well, Kim, I'm going to start off with you. I mean, as a Muslim, what does it mean to have gone through the last 5 months or so, seeing this genocide take place against the Palestinians? And what does it mean for you to go through this month of Ramadan, knowing that they are still being subjected to this Holocaust?
Good evening to you, Marzia. This is just a sheer torture of humanity at large, worldwide. Even non-Muslims are being deeply affected and traumatized by what's going on. As you have quite rightly pointed out, a lot of people are saying the same thing. This is a Holocaust, and it is abominable. It's an abomination in our modern time, in history, at this particular point in time to allow something like this to happen and then to continue and then to see no end in sight in this holy month where all their mosques have been destroyed, flattened to the ground, their homes, they are existing in rubble, and it's a torture. We're all being tortured. We're all being traumatized by what's going on here because these people are our brothers and sisters in faith as well as in humanity being tortured right in front of our own eyes. And we are affected by this. And millions of Palestinians who are not allowed to return to their homeland abroad are also affected, very deeply affected by this. And this is going to leave a very stinky, dark stain on the conscience of humanity, and in particular those who have been aiding and abetting it and continuing to aid and abet this, knowing full well that it is a very serious crime. It is a supreme crime under the UN charter and legislations. And we're just being fobbed off with empty words such as airdropping of aid and that kind of thing. And that's just completely neither here nor there, while you are supplying enormous amount of weapon and aid to this regime, to this illegal regime that is committing this Holocaust against the people of Palestine. It's awful, awful. We're all very traumatized by it. And we would like to see it end, like last night, not tomorrow, last night, because the majority of the victims are also, we need to note this, women and children. This criminal regime has been specifically targeting women and children for a specific criminal agenda that it is trying to put further in this campaign, this illegal campaign. And the idea is they don't want any future generations of Palestinian resistance. They regard resistance of Palestinians as terrorism. On the contrary, the whole world is now aware of the fact that it is this regime that is the terrorist here, not okay. The Palestinians. And we hope that it will end very soon.
Excuse me, stay with me, please. Let me get Zafar into this discussion. Well, throughout these months, we've seen the strength and the faith of many Palestinians while going through the most difficult of times. They have been strong and even inspiring others. Your take, what do you attribute that side of things to, Zafar?
Well, what we are witnessing in Gaza and among the Palestinians in general is their strong faith, their iman, in the face of these barbaric attacks against them, against their women, against their children, against their infrastructure, whether it is hospitals, schools, dispensaries, bakeries, their homes, their apartment buildings. What this shows is their immense, immense commitment of faith. And that is what really keeps them going. They have actually inspired people worldwide, not just Muslims, but also non-Muslims who see their resilience and their determination in the face of these barbaric attacks. At the same time, I think it is important for us to realize that what is referred to as the international community or international law is a pathetic joke. It's a sick joke against the world, against the oppressed people. International law is only invoked when the aggressors, for instance, have to carry out certain crimes against other people. But when innocent people want to defend themselves, then international law, the UN Charter, and all of these things go deadly silent. We are witnessing what the Americans are doing, basically are the underwriters of Zionist crimes in Palestine. They are providing the Israelis bombs and missiles, and they have provided diplomatic protection. For instance, they prevent Security Council resolutions to be passed. Not that Israel has ever cared about any United Nations Security Council resolutions, but even so, the Americans exercise their veto, which is a totally illegal instrument. And so we see that on the one hand, the Palestinians are showing immense determination and resilience, but on the other hand, they have exposed the criminal nature of the international system, the United Nations, and these so-called Western powers that are all composed of hypocrites and terrorists and who are the enemies of humanity.
Well, Kim, listening to what Zafar said about exposing what these entities really are, I mean, isn't the reality is that this has always been the reality? This international law was set up for certain countries to benefit from. But what has happened, at least during the last 5.5 months, is that more and more people have seen more clarity in this area to realize what the reality is. Or how do you see it?
Well, no, I mean, I totally agree with what you have said, and I also totally agree with what Zafar has said. Historically, it's always been the case that the UN has been used against non-European white people when it came to enforcement of criminal sanctions, for example. And it never got applied against white Western powerful nations such as the U.S. itself, which is guilty of genocide itself historically, and even to this present day, it's continuing its campaigns, because this campaign that's going on in Gaza at the moment wouldn't go on if the U.S. steps in and says no, stop it now. Actually, it's the U.S. that wants to continue doing it. U.S. sees itself as an empire and colonial sort of agenda that is trying to further in the world. Yes, it has the laws have been applied inconsistently. But what the Gazans have shown in their determination and steadfastness, and the Palestinians generally in their resistance, have shown the world is that the depth and the level of hypocrisy and vindictiveness of the Western allied nations, including the criminal illegal regime in Palestine. And it's been a great opportunity to explore what's really going on in Palestine. You see, historically, we only had Iran, may Allah bless you all, and the Axis of Resistance Nations and its friends that were bringing out the suffering of the people of Palestine. But now the whole world is involved in this. The whole world has seen what has been going on for 70 years. Even Jewish people themselves are now in line with the resistance, saying enough is enough and no for this. And so whilst historically it's been like that, but then in the present case, it has now been an opportunity to unmask the hypocrites and to show the rest of the world that this can't continue. As you are aware, Africa has become a more power to reckon with economically, South Africa in particular and its application. And I have recently heard one of their Syrian ministers making a speech where she said that if any Israeli national attempts to come into South Africa, they will be arrested. And so many other nations need to be encouraged to do the same thing, because the law can be explored, the facts can be explored at the UN level, because that's an opportunity. The whole world looks to the UN for these kind of issues without being aware of the inconsistencies, the racism and the colonialism that has been applied to the UN system. Now people can see the facts and the law as to what has been going on in relation to Palestine. And nations like South Africa can then take steps to reinforce those rules by taking independent sanctions steps. Like I have just quoted the minister that I heard there. I was very pleased to hear her say this. I think she's the foreign minister, and I don't know her name. I thought I was almost in tears when I heard her speak yesterday. And so many other nations are taking similar steps. And with the strength and the determination of the Palestinian people to survive, their resilience, their steadfastness, their faith, their strong faith, as our colleague has just said, Zafar, this will bring an end to this inconsistency, to this racism, to this colonialism. We just need to be strong and carry on doing this.
Okay.
And
let me get Zafar back in on this. Zafar, this genocide has been broadcast live, and I want to look at that situation, because it's the first time that we have 24-hour nonstop and seeing these unbelievable images come across our phones or screens. I want to talk about the effect that this has had because of social media, because of those journalists on the ground in Gaza, and actually showing the reality that it has allowed for more and more people to become aware. And as Kim has said, that people all over the world now are reacting to this genocide, which of course, it's nothing new, except it's taken a different form. But this time it seems to be that more people are aware.
Oh, absolutely. And this is to the credit of those journalists who have, are put their lives on the line in Gaza in reporting this. You mustn't forget that at least 123 journalists have been killed in Gaza by the Zionists, and they've deliberately targeted them because they don't want the reality to come out and the reality to be shown in the world. I think we need to sort of, deconstruct the situation in a way that, whereas the mainstream media by and large pursues the Zionist narrative, whether it's CNN or BBC or New York Times, etc., whereas the other, what is referred to as the alternative media, which is outside the control of the Western media, that they are able to present the reality on the ground. Of course, among Western journalists also, there are some brave souls that have spoken out, but I think they are mainly on the alternative media platforms. That's one aspect. The other, of course, is that as far as the Palestinian people are concerned, their cause has now been taken up by the masses of the world. They have actually seen not only their resilience and their steadfastness and the validity of their stand, but it has also exposed the Zionists as never before. Because in the past, the Zionists always trotted out this claim of Holocaust and racism and so on. And now people are witnessing in real time that a Holocaust is being perpetrated against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Not only in Gaza, even in the West Bank. For instance, last night, Palestinians were prevented from going to Masjid al-Aqsa to participate in nightly prayers. The Zionists had set up checkpoints in Jerusalem, in the old city, East Jerusalem, and they were checking everybody's bags and so on, and putting reports. They prevented people who were under the age of 40 from going there. Dozens of people were arrested. And this, I think, is something that we are likely to see more and more in this month of Ramadan, because the Zionists have a very determined campaign. They want to destroy Masjid al-Aqsa, and they want to build their mythical third temple. There are all kinds of, reports coming out. And I think we need to keep that in mind. And even while the genocide in Gaza is going, that Masjid al-Aqsa is also under attack. And naturally, in occupied West Bank, more than 1,000 Palestinians have been kidnapped and put in prisons. Horrible torture is being inflicted on them. This is now becoming widely reported, and I think it's something that needs to be spread more widely. But unfortunately, it is not having any impact on the regimes in the world, particularly Western regimes, because they are all complicit. This genocide with the Zionists, particularly the United States, which actually is underwriting Zionist crimes. And we know that because it's an election year in the U.S., that both candidates are vying to buy the Zionist lobby support or to accrue to themselves their support so that they could get back into power. And that, again, once again, actually exposes that America is Zionist-occupied country. It is not a free country at all. And I think the rest of the beginning to recognize that as well.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Kim, if we look at the name of the operation on October 7th, Al-Aqsa flood, we understand the significance of Masjid Al-Aqsa. And we all recall the clashing or the total unbelievable cruel actions by the Zionist regime last month of Ramadan and then on at Masjid Al-Aqsa. So using this point of what's happening in the West Bank and in Gaza, what do you think it's going to take with this new awareness by people of what is going on to bring all of this to an end?
Well, I expect there to be a much wider international movement, grassroots movement, to keep up and sustain the pressure against the Western regimes that back this criminal regime from different perspectives, including using domestic laws to prosecute those who are aiding and abetting them. But the point of the Al-Aqsa is that it is a Muslim symbol, and one would have thought that all Muslim nations would be united here and make a very strong move to bring an end to this endless suffering of the people of the West Bank as well as Gaza. But unfortunately, we're not seeing that. We're seeing some very good Muslim nations doing their best, and some of them to their detriment, like Iran, for example, and Yemen. And there are those who are not doing enough, and there are those who are actually helping the criminal regime continue this. When we used to say about the plan of the building of the temple, the third temple, people used to joke and laugh at us and call us conspiracy theorists. But the reality is this is not a conspiracy, it's a factual reality. The reason why they continue abusing the Palestinians in the Al-Aqsa area is to prevent them from coming there. They want the Palestinians to give up their right to be there altogether and maybe even leave Palestine altogether, just like the other 7 million who are stranded abroad. And then they can have the space all to themselves and do what they like with it. But I believe there is a grassroots movement, which is very strong, notwithstanding the amount of abuse we are getting from our own authorities in terms of labeling us extremists, labeling us troublemakers, doing everything they can in their power to also abuse us here, to prevent us from making some noise about this Holocaust in Palestine. People are carrying on. I mean, I know one famous star called Charlotte Church herself faced enormous amount of abuse online and elsewhere and accusations of anti-Semitism, etc. But she's carrying on. So this grassroots movement, just like it freed South Africa from the apartheid regime back then, will also free Palestine. And I'm confident about that. We just need to stay strong and carry on and support our brothers and sisters in Palestine, whether inside Palestine or outside.
Excuse me. Yes, well, Zafar, what Kim has talked about in this movement that needs to grow. I mean, I also want to look at the pressure, though, on the other hand, that the Zionist regime is feeling internally, because we see this definitely, although they're continuing and doing what they want to do against the Palestinians, but we do see cracks in the regime. We also see, for example, the ultra-Orthodox Jews are... are actually fighting back because they want to recruit more soldiers. They need more soldiers. The economic situation. I mean, let's talk about inside of the regime itself and what is happening. And of course, we know the anti-Netanyahu rallies that were happening even before all of this took place.
Yes, absolutely. I think there are deep cracks inside the Zionist entity itself. There are several factions. For instance, you mentioned the Orthodox Jews. 1.3 million of them who have not served in the military, and they refuse to serve in the military because their thinking is that they should be in occupied Palestine only to study the Torah. And of course, they receive subsidies from the government. And at this time, the fact that the regime of Netanyahu is contemplating recruiting these Orthodox Jews into the military indicates that there is a tremendous shortage of manpower in their military, the attrition that they have suffered in terms of the number of deaths that they have suffered, the number of traumas, the tens of thousands of Israeli soldiers that have suffered from trauma, and the tens of thousands of Israelis that have been wounded. This has really, really sent a shockwave inside Israeli society. That's one dimension of it. But as you mentioned, Netanyahu had been faced against him because he's been involved in a corruption scandal. There are charges against him. And, you know, it is absolutely certain, in fact, that, you know, the moment this war stops, Netanyahu would be in handcuffs, he'd be dragged to prison, and he'd be charged with several, you know, charges. Number one, his corruption charges, nepotism, and then his opponents are also accusing him of failing to the Israeli public because, you know, he considered himself to be the Mr. Security, and then it was on his watch that that brilliant operation that Hamas and Islamic Jihad launched on October the 7th, you know, Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, that I think really sent a shockwave through the Zionist society. And then you also have within the Israeli government, the cabinet, there are divisions over there because there are people that are not happy with Netanyahu doing this whole thing. They see him as trying to protect his own skin as opposed to protecting the Israeli people. And then you also have the families of the Israelis that Hamas and Islamic Jihad captured in their daring operation. These are prisoners of war, but their families are demanding that Netanyahu should do more to get their release. And of course, Netanyahu is not going along with that because he, as I mentioned, the moment this war stops, he ends up in prison. He basically sabotaged the discussions that were taking place in Cairo, whereby Hamas had made very reasonable proposals to end this war, not only for a hostage swap, but the Palestinian hostages that Israel is holding, but also Israeli prisoners that Hamas and Islamic Jihad are holding, but that there should be a permanent ceasefire. Not that, you know, you give them their prisoners back and then Israel resumes its bombing and continue killing. Right. That is a non-starter, and that is something that Hamas will not accept. And that is, I think, a very, very important consideration.
Well, Kim, as the genocide continues, so does the resistance. Do you think the month of Ramadan will actually inspire the resistance even further?
I expect that because, you see, they have nothing further to lose. They've lost everything, practically everything. And all they have is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His mercy. And their connection with Allah is becoming stronger. And I expect that to be the case also with the majority of Muslims who have so far not been as effective as they ought to have been. And therefore, I see changes taking place. And of course, you know, God has an amazing way of operating. And like Zafar has just mentioned, there is tension inside Israel itself. And the Israelis themselves can see that this criminal bloke is carrying on this genocidal campaign for his own personal benefit and nothing to do with the people of Israel itself. And a lot of the Jewish people who will come out in the Saturday marches on Saturdays in London make it very clear that they are against this and they're not with it. And so there's a change happening inside the Zionist regime itself. There's change happening outside it. And the people of Palestine, we hope and pray that they will remain in, as steadfast as they are. And I expect them to be like that. In fact, maybe to grow even stronger because they have even more reason now to resist even more strongly simply because of what has happened to them. That, you know, what doesn't.